You are listening to Trial Live, hosted by Robert Forteau and Casey Randall. Trial Live is a show about goal setting, triathlons, training, sports, and the outdoors. Trial Live is brought to you by Dream Chaser Leadership and Be Alive.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forteau, and you're listening to Trial Live, a show about, as they said, triathlons, goal setting, inspiration, and more. It is brought to you by Dream Chaser Leadership and Be Alive. And our co-host is Casey Randall. She's calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. Casey, how's it going?
It's going good, Robert. Good morning. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I hope you guys can hear my stomach growling. Of course, it would just start as soon as we get on the air, right? But I'm really excited about today's show. Of course, I'm always excited to talk to you. And we have an awesome guest here today that we've had on the show before, Erica Bennett. And she was a participant, a competitor, just a great racer in this year's inaugural Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon, which was held in July 15th, right? And I think we should say what the race is. Erica, in a minute, you can give us the, the length, and so everybody knows what you're talking about in case they missed the previous show. But I know she has a lot to say. Do you have anything to say before she jumps in, Robert?
Nope. Let's just jump in. She's got one heck of a story, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, hi, Erica. Thanks for being here. And huge, huge congratulations. I mean, we're also very proud of all your hard work. But before you dive into the whole race report, which you have an awesome one for us today, can you just remind us what the distance of this triathlon is?
Well, thank you, Robert and Casey, for having me back. Obviously, I finished the race. Well, not obviously, but yay, I finished the race. The race was the Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon. It's an Ironman distance race, which means the swim is 2.6 miles, and the bicycle is around 112 miles, and then the run is about 26 miles. In our particular race, it wound up being 27 with some pretty serious mountain action going on at the last 7 miles. Over the entire distance of the race, we gain more than 10,000 feet in elevation, which is pretty
wow.
Taxing on the body, which is what makes it extreme, as well as the temperature of the water that we swim in is averages between 50 and 55 degrees, which is also why it's considered extreme. I wasn't really looking for an extreme triathlon. I told the listeners last April, but I was looking for another Ironman distance race to do, and this one sort of fell into my lap and on my backyard, so I decided to give it a shot. And I knew I'd need plenty of time to train because of the extremeness and the fact that it is an Ironman. So without any more ado, unless you have any specific questions, I can sort of run you through the race, but I promise I won't take 17 hours like it took me to do the race. Do you have any questions?
If I could, yes, if I could, Erica, could you tell us a little bit about your race experience? I know you've done triathlons in the past, and you're definitely a triathlete, but how did you get involved with this? Just a quick bio, if you could.
That's a great question, because it's not something 10 years ago I would have even told you I was thinking about. It was not on my radar. I barely knew what a triathlon was. But 9 years ago, I had the opportunity to represent Alaska in a national pageant. That's another story. And as Mrs. Alaska, I went and got to go to the Mrs. America pageant. And the lady who won that year wasn't me. She was a triathlete. And I got to know a little bit about that type of sport from her. And then I came back to Alaska, and I heard about this Gold Nugget Triathlon, which was a wonderful entry-level short sprint triathlon just for women. So I gave it a go, And although I was brand new to the sport, really couldn't swim very well, after my first race, I was absolutely enamored and hooked. So for the past 8 years, I've been dabbling in sprint triathlons. I've done probably between 10 and 20 sprint triathlons, done a couple of Olympic distance, which is twice as long as a sprint. I've done 2 half Ironmans, which is twice as long as an Olympic. And I've done 1 traditional Ironman distance race down in Coeur d'Alene, put on by the Ironman Corporation. And then now I've done this 1 extreme triathlon. So I'm not a long-term triathlete, but I'm hooked for quite a while as far as I'm concerned.
And, hey, we didn't know this, or, well, I knew it, but we hadn't had announced this claim to fame. But, yes, Erica was Mrs. Alaska. So we are talking to a former Mrs. Alaska. We're in royalty, Robert.
Wow. That's awesome for sure.
So that's my background. And I look forward to using triathlon as a way to stay fit and, quote, be alive as much as I can. I can firmly place the fact that I did my first Ironman distance race into Casey's lap, because I was talking with her about triathlons, and she told me her story and how she used triathlon as a way to help her through her cancer ordeal. And I was like, man, I don't think I could ever do an Ironman. She just looked right at me, and she says, yes, you can. And that just tipped the scales. I'm like, my goodness, I guess I can. So here I am.
Yeah, you owe it all to me, Erica. No, I'm kidding. Well, and here we are today where, I mean, I love hearing the story of how you got started, how it's evolved, how you've just continued to, you know, up the ante and do bigger races. And I just want to say Erica's going to dive into this race report. She's going to tell us all about her swimming, biking, and running. But while she did this, she had a support crew, which she'll tell you about, friends and family that were there. But they had Be Alive shirts on, and she spread the message from Seward to Girdwood, Bird Point to Girdwood. So just thank you again for putting that message out there.
Well, it's a great message.
So tell us about the race.
All right. Well, with that brief background, let's head back to July 15th of this year. I had been training for this race for a solid 8 months, 10 months if you count dabbling in just getting my biking and running back up to speed, but 8 months on paper. Had a great, great coach named Lisa Keller from Multisport Training of Alaska. She helped keep me on track, and as long as I followed her plan, I knew that I would be able to finish this race, and that was my goal. I'd love to be able to win things. I'm that competitive, but I'm also very realistic. So finishing this race was going to be my goal. We went down, my family and I went down to Seward on the 13th and checked in down at a place I rented in Miller's Landing. I need to have plenty of lead time for me to be able to wrap my brain around big events. So we got settled in there, picked up all the race stuff the day before. And I have this sort of race nutrition plan that starts a couple of days ahead of time so that I know that my body and my gut is ready for a big taxing event. And it's taken a few triathlons to figure that one out. But everybody's different, but some people like to know what goes into that fourth leg of the triathlon, people call it. It's the nutrition. And a couple of days ahead of time, I start upping my carbs, but not like a big spaghetti feed or anything. And then I start dialing back on fat and dialing back on fiber. And the morning of the race, I have a pre-race breakfast about 4 hours ahead of time. And I've got all sorts of interesting things, some supplements. I eat quinoa, sweet potato, coconut oil, honey, applesauce, not a lot of it. And then I haven't had much caffeine, so I always make sure that I can throw caffeine in on the during the race sometime when I need it. So the Saturday the morning, we're up at 12:30 in the morning for me to start my pre-race stuff. My husband, Ross, and I take my bicycle down to the transition one area where I'm going to get on my bike, set up the bike. It's raining, and it's dark and it's very foreboding for the race day. I was like, well, this is going to be a typical Alaskan day. So everybody's a little freaked out with making sure they're going to stay warm enough on the bike ride. I go back to where I'm staying, which I planned for it to be right next to the swim start. So I'm only about 75 yards from the swim start where I'm staying. And I have to tell myself not to freak out. My nerves are frayed. My brain is going a million miles a minute. I almost forget to put my race tattoos on with my race numbers. So I set my alarm, which is funny because I was way up way before my alarm anyway. So I'm stuffing myself into my wetsuit at 3:45, and I put everything on. I've got a neoprene cap, a neoprene glove, booties, everything to keep myself warm in this water. And I head down to the race start, which I jogged down there to help warm myself up. And I'm all of a sudden in this crowd of a couple hundred people that look terrified or totally and completely in their own little zone. There's not anybody, nobody's talking. And I'm looking for faces that I recognize because I know a few people. I don't recognize anybody because we all look like seals. They're all encased in neoprene and have goggles on. So it's a little foreboding, and it's 4:30 in the morning, and it's still kind of dusky, and it's quite foggy. It's still drizzling. The water is beautifully calm, thank goodness. That's not scary. So they set the tone at the beginning of the race by singing the national anthem. A wonderful Native lady sang it. I can't remember her name right now, but she sang it beautifully, which helped sort of settle my nerves because I get terribly patriotic when I hear that song. And then they didn't really allow us a whole lot of time to think. They told us where to sight. They actually couldn't put any buoys out because of the depth of the water. So we had some very, very bright lights to sight off of that were 2 miles away. And that kind of went in and out of the fog. So that was a challenge for me. I don't have a ton of sighting practice. So it was an in-water start. So they told us to get in the water, and we had about a minute and a half before they pulled the trigger on the start gun. And as some people were getting in that water, there were shouts and screams of shock. I wasn't one of them because I knew it was coming, but if somebody wasn't prepared for that water, they got a real big comeuppance that morning. And it was about 55 degrees when we got into the water at Miller's Landing. But thanks to a couple of glacial streams that are part of the route, dumping nice, frigid cold water into the bay, the temperature dropped to roughly 47 degrees, somewhere in the middle and somewhere towards the end, thanks to Lowell Creek. And it was like running into a brick wall in the water.
Wow.
And if you stick your face in cold water, you get that mammalian dive reflex where you just you can't breathe. And to control your panic through those sections, it took a lot of willpower. And in fact, most of my mantra during the time it took me to swim that distance was, you're okay, just keep going. You're okay, just keep going. I guess it could have been like Dory and then Finding Nemo, just keep swimming. swimming for me is not a challenge. I'm a slow but steady swimmer, which did get me to the end, but I had no idea that I was one of the last people out of the water. And I barely made the 2.5 hour cutoff. My race almost ended that morning because it took me 2 hours and 21 minutes to finish that swim. And the cutoff was 2.5 hours. I was so hypothermic when they pulled me out of the water. I could barely walk. My husband was there hanging on to me. My stepdaughter, Ashley, was pouring hot water down my back. My daughter was getting, Kina was giving me hot cocoa. I was shaking uncontrollably. And everybody was kind of wondering if they should let me ride my bike. So half an hour later, I was coherent enough to get on the bike. I switched clothes, warmed up some, and got out on the bike. And to give you an idea, of the fastest swimmers got out of the water in just over an hour. So they weren't nearly exposed to the cold that I was, lucky them. And I also got the chance to feel what it was like to swim in 3-foot seas because all of the tour boats were leaving at around 6:30 in the morning, throwing out wake waves across our path. And I didn't know that was happening at the time. I just thought the weather had turned and I was going through some storm in the ocean. So I have to become a faster swimmer if I'm going to do this again. So I'm finally warmed up enough to get on the bike. My husband gets me on the bike in transition, and I could tell he's worried. I can't say that I was worried because I just wanted to keep moving forward. I knew that I needed to get on the bike if I was going to continue this race. Once I got on the bike, the first quarter mile, I'm still shaking, and I have to stop at a stop sign. Everybody has to stop at the stop sign because it's part of the road rules. You're on the road. And I thought I was unclipped in time, but I wasn't. And I toppled at the stop sign a quarter mile into the race. And I don't remember hurting myself, but I think I might have. Thank goodness a few other people actually did topple at the exact same spot. So I didn't feel I felt like I was in good company, I suppose. But the first 10 miles of the bike, I finally warmed up, and I knew I had the right clothing on. I got into my groove, so to speak. And this is where my training really, really kicked in. I didn't encounter anything on the bike that I hadn't done twice or three times during training. And I was so happy that I'd been able to be on course training and training in every condition possible because the beginning of the bike was rainy and wet and cold. But the last half of the bike was just windy and sunny. So it's like Mother Nature decided to throw the whole smorgasbord at us, which was interesting. So the elevation gain on the bike was pretty typical. It was about 4,200 feet. And anybody that's driven from Anchorage to Seward knows that it gets pretty narrow. So that was the biggest fear on the bike was the lack of shoulder. We were going northbound early in the morning, which is the best direction to go if you're going to pick a direction. And I had my support team out there, and that's the really great thing about this race is that I got to choose who was going to support me on this race because unlike traditional Ironman events, there were not aid stations every 10 miles. There was not a closed course. There was not somebody there to throw a hand you Gatorade. Not that I am against that. I kind of like that. But when your family is with you and they have to just be spectators, it gets pretty boring for them. And you don't get to see them as an athlete very often. But at this race, they got to physically touch me, help me, get me going. And then on the bike ride, they were leapfrogging me with a support vehicle, with keeping track of me, making sure that I had plenty of nutrition, plenty of hydration. We had predetermined spots along the highway that we were able to stop at. And we had kind of a pit crew mentality, get me in, get me out, get me back on the road as quickly as possible. And that's where my Be Alive team came in. We had T-shirts for everybody, and they would see me coming. They would I would see them in the parking lot, and I would either go past them or I would stop in for more nutrition and hydration or to peel a layer off because halfway through the bike ride, I'm warmed up. I don't need two layers on, so I start peeling layers off just to stay cool. So it was just this really, really wonderful experience with knowing that somebody out there was specifically looking after me and cheering for me. They had my name blazoned on the back of the truck, and they would leapfrog me through the race course. They'd pass me, they'd honk, and then they'd pull over, watch me go by again, pass me and honk, and it wasn't very distracting. In fact, I actually felt myself really focusing and being really proud of the fact that I'm out there doing this with them. Excuse me, I'm a little emotional. So I get to the bike end. And I'm just really feeling strong emotionally and physically, thank goodness, because the bike was exactly what I thought it would be. And I knew that sometimes things don't work out. There were a lot of flat tires on the route. I don't know why, but maybe people ran into something that I didn't, thank goodness. there was some wind on the route that I knew was coming, but I was prepared for it. So I get to the transition two, where I'm going to get off my bike and get on in my shoes and start running. And I had my first real mess up, where my hydration pack that I had filled full of water, for the first 12 miles of the run, I had to be self-sufficient. I had my own nutrition and I had a hydration pack to run with. It had completely leaked out and it was empty and it soaked everything in my bag. And I kind of deflated. I was like, oh, well, this might not work out. But there were some really great volunteers at Transition 2 who did fill that pack back up for me while I was putting my soggy shoes on. And thank goodness my shoes did not give me blisters, but that's what I thought was going to have happen. So it took me about, I'd say, five longer minutes in Transition 2 to get me out the door, so to speak. But the fact that I could keep going with hydration, because I wouldn't have been able to keep running if I didn't have any water. Because at that point, it was about 70 degrees, and I had completely taken everything off down in my triathlon kit, just my shorts and my singlet. And the first 12 miles of that run, you are in your own world. You are around other runners, but everybody's got their own race plan. And like the bike, the run is hard to stay in your own world. You'll see somebody in front of you and you get that competitive bug and you're like, hey, maybe I can catch that person. Then you realize you're being drawn into their race instead of your own race. And you have to stay in your own race if you're going to make it to the end. Because if you start running someone else's race, you're not going to be able to keep up or you're going to be out of whack. So I did pass quite a few people on the bike, even though I wasn't trying to, which was very emboldening. And on the run, I'm not a fast runner, but I have a gait that I like to stick with, and it seems to help get me to mile 12, where I could get more hydration, and mile 14, right at the base of Alyeska, my brother got to hook up with me and run 6 miles with me. My brothers Dirk and Eric Bernhardt came up from the States to support their little sister, and Eric ran with me, and that was the neatest experience, having him there. Everybody that I saw that had their a runner with them from mile 14 to 20 was animated, was happy, was looking pretty tired, but was more involved with their runner, their friend or whatever, than being able to sort of deal with their own misery. And then the final part, from mile 20 to mile 27, I was mandated to have somebody with me because of safety, because this is the mountain run. You're starting at the base of Alyeska Mountain, hiking, running, hiking, whatever you can do, up to what's called Glacier Bowl, which is 2,200 to 3,000 feet of elevation gain, depending on which way you go, then back down to the base of Alyeska, and then up another 2,000 feet of north face climbing to the finish. So I had my husband, Ross, with me. I had my brother, Eric, with me. And I had another dear friend, Jody Harskamp, with me, who you've had on other shows. And she's an amazing woman. So picture this little tribe going up the mountain. Jody was in front, politely asking people to step aside. I was next with my husband next to me. And my brother, Eric, was behind me with a willow switch, keeping the flies and bugs off me because it was calm and hot. And there were just, if you stopped at all, you were just covered in insects. So we were quite this little entourage going up and down the mountain. A lot of people bonked on that mountain. They either didn't get their nutrition right, didn't hydrate properly, didn't keep their salt levels high. And it was interesting to see how that worked because I dialed it in. I don't know. I'm very happy with my nutrition because I didn't have any issues. The last 7 miles is when I threw my caffeine on board, and it did beautifully because right about halfway through that mountain run, I sped up, and we wound up making up is places, about 15 places right on that mountain. So we did finish. I finished in 17 hours and 8 minutes. Which is about 20% of the people who did the race finished in 17 hours. 197 started, 156 six finished, I think. So about 35% didn't finish that started. There were about 26 women that started, 25 finished, and I came in about 15th. So right in the middle of the pack, pretty happy with my performance, and I'm just happy I did it, and all my friends and family are going to be sick and tired of listening to it for the next couple of years until I do another crazy thing.
Well, I know that I don't think they'll get sick and tired of listening to it, Erica. I mean, what an amazing feat and something no one can ever take away. And I'm sure that it's going to continue to keep changing your life, you know?
It certainly is an experience that puts a lot of other things into perspective. And I hope that my daughter being around me during these journeys helps her realize that sometimes when you want something bad enough, that you have to set up a goal plan. You have to at least maneuver yourself. It's not going to happen overnight. And if you don't do it properly, whatever it is, then you're not necessarily going to fail, but you might have to take longer or come at it a different direction.
What do you think, Robert?
So, Erica, I have awesome for sure. And I have a question. We have just a couple of minutes left, so I want to make sure that you get in. You have a very special message, a Be Alive message you want to talk about as well. But you, Erica, you had mentioned that you really liked the support system with having your family there and, you know, that part of the race. That seems very unusual to have that type of support. Like you said, they were swatting flies off you as you were going up the mountain. Did you talk to anybody after the race, and did they feel the same as you? And what would happen if they did not have a support system? Let's say that they're a single person and they travel to on their own up here. How would they fare in the race, do you think?
Well, one of the draws of this type of extreme race is the self-supportiveness. That is one common theme I'm finding from people who've done multiple extreme triathlons, is that camaraderie and is that self-supportiveness. I do believe, having done just one completely supported race and one completely unsupported race, that I actually prefer the unsupported race because I can do things on my own terms.
Meaning with your family.
With my family.
With the family support, right.
So that was, I like the unsupported, what I mean by unsupported, of course, is non-race supported. Family supported versus other support. So does that answer your question?
The second part was, what would happen if somebody did not have a support system like you had? Let's say, like I said, they're traveling by themselves and, you know, they came up with no one. They just came up on their own. Would they be able to do it? Out.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's part of the race. You have to have one support team person with you, mandated. You have to.
Good. I gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? Oh, sorry, Robert. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask one other question, and I think we talked about this when you were on before, but is this any type of qualifier or anything for, you know, the typical Ironman? I know you have to do, you know, a regular Ironman to go to the championship. Is this in the same realm as that, or is this totally separate?
It's totally separate. And it is part of a family of five other extreme triathlons, and there is a world tour, but no, finishing one doesn't guarantee you anything for the next one. But it does allow you to be a part of a lottery to get into the other ones. But it's not part of the Ironman system at all, no.
Okay. Casey, do you have any other questions? I know you've talked to Erica a lot. She's a good friend of yours.
Well, I just wanted to mention that, you know, seeing her train for this, I mean, I'm so proud of her. I can't, you know, say congratulations enough. She just made us all so very proud. But seeing the family support, they're just all part of the race, you know, her husband, I got to meet her brothers who came up to Alaska, you know, her daughters, so proud, and they were all there and friends. So I think that's just a very unique, awesome race.
Speaking of unique and awesome races,
I agree.
We did secure a free entry into the Alaska Man Extreme 2018 for Be Alive. So Be Alive has the one and only free entry, and Be Alive gets to decide whether to auction it off or find the right athlete to support next year. So that's our big announcement, and more will come in October or afterwards after the lottery is done. So that's a pretty big thing.
It's amazing. I'm just we're all so excited about that. So yeah, good things ahead, right?
Yeah, that is awesome as well. Erica, are you planning on doing it again? I know that you trained real hard for this. Are you up for it for a second year in a row?
No, not a second year. Next year, I'm taking the year off for other things, mainly my daughter's races. And my next big year is going to be when I'm 48 in 2019. So news in a year or so.
we'll have to keep Excellent. Track of this one. She doesn't sit still very long.
Wow. You know, Erica, congratulations. I was so looking forward to having you on the show, considering we talked several months ago when you're in the heat of training and preparing real hard for this, and nobody, absolutely nobody, knew what to expect from this race. They had no idea about the cold temperatures of Resurrection Bay. They haven't necessarily been on the course as a race per se, and of course they never have done the up and down type thing that you did on Alyeska in a race like you did and combined them all together. And I know people came from all over. Were people just as excited about the race as you were when they finished, or were they thinking, oh my goodness, what in the world did I just do?
All of the above. Actually, there were a few racers that had just done the other extreme triathlons, and this one was par for the course. The ones that have done the other extreme ones say the swim was particularly difficult because of the zero visibility and the cold. And then the up-down-up, the elevation gain in the last 7 miles was the most extreme. So it's the temperature of the water, the visibility of the water, and then the up-down-up at the end of the run that created the extreme portion of the Alaska Man.
Awesome. Erica, lastly, are you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anything where folks can follow you along and maybe see some pictures of the race or at least chat about it as we move forward?
Well, the race itself has a Facebook page. It's called the Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon. I have a Facebook page. It's under Erica Bennett, E-R-I-K-A-B-E-N-N-E-T-T. I'm not a big poster, and I don't have any of my personal photos on there. But the Alaska Man Triathlon website, which is akxtri.com, has an amazing gallery of photos that if anybody wants to do that. And then there's also an entire page of race reports from other racers. So I love reading through all of those. There are some very good writers out there.
And I think we're gonna have to give them the link to this show too, because I think people, you know, it's great to read a race report, but to hear Erica talk about the race, I think a lot of people are gonna benefit from this. They're gonna connect to it. So we need to make sure that the Extreme Triathlon has this link as well.
Excellent, for sure. Well, again, thank you very much, Erica, for joining us. And Casey, thank you, as always, for making the connection for the show. Any news before we go? I know we're over, and folks will hear this when they stream it, but any other news you want to mention?
Oh, man, I think we need to put a bulletin for the sun to come back to Alaska. That's my news. I'm done with the rain.
I know.
How about you?
Yeah, I agree with you as well. We're in that kind of rainy season here. It's been raining for most of the week up here in Willow. And it's sort of that interesting time where summer is sort of over and we're moving into fall. And for us, we're getting ready to start our fall training for mushing. We have our first event in October, the Dryland Mushing event at Chugiak, and we're going to start training for that on bikes and scooters and carts. So we're looking forward to that. We're hoping to have 4 or 5 teams, and we're the title sponsor of that, Casey. My company,
wow.
Alaska Dog Works, title sponsor of the Chugiak Dryland Mush Series. So we're looking forward to that, and maybe we can talk about that on a future show.
Dan, I would love to talk about it. I'd love to learn more about it and maybe be able to come out and see some of that. And also, I just wanted to throw in that, you know, my kids and I, we go down to a place, Prince of Wales Island. Every September, we go to help out a friend who runs an awesome lodge on Prince of Wales, Kaufman Cove Adventures. And so we're going to be going down there for the month of September. And I don't know, maybe we can, maybe I can call in from Little Kaufman Cove and give you a few updates of what we're doing down in the southeast as well.
That is awesome. And as typical with most Alaskans, we do a lot of crazy stuff, whether it's extreme triathlons or mushing or hanging out on islands in the middle of nowhere. We get out there and be alive for sure. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And thanks to my co-host and our guest today. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
To ready, set, go, back to school. Ready? Okay.
We've got paper. Yes, we do. Lifeful notebooks, pencils, glue. We've got crayons, every hue. School supplies for your whole crew.
Target's got everything you need to ready, set, go, back to school.